Chapter 16. 10 hours ahead in time, 2 a.m. in Moscow, 4 men were grouped around a fireplace that warmed a small sitting room inside the Kremlin. The room was poorly lit and had a morbid feel about it. Cigarette smoke mingled with that of a single cigar. Soviet President Georgi Antonov stared thoughtfully at the undulating flames. He had removed his coat after a light dinner and replaced it with an old fisherman's sweater. His shoes were off and his stocking feet casually propped on an embroidered ottoman. Vladimir Polovoy, head of the Committee for State Security, and Sergei Kornilov, chief of the Soviet space program, wore dark wool suits, custom tailored in London, while General Yasenin sat in full bemedaled uniform. Polovoy threw the report and photographs on a low table and shook his head in amazement. "I don't see how they accomplished it without a breach of secrecy." "Such an extraordinary advance seems inconceivable," Kornilov agreed. "I won't believe it until I see more proof."
"The proof is evident in the photographs," said Yasenin. "Rykov's report leaves no room for doubt. Study the detail. The two figures standing on the moon are real. They are not an illusion cast by shadows or created by a flaw in the scanning system. They exist."
"The spacesuits do not match those of American astronauts," Kornilov retorted. "The helmets are also designed differently."
"I won't argue over trivials," said Yasenin, "but there is no mistaking the weapon in their hands. I can positively identify it as a surface-to-air missile launcher of American manufacture."
"Then where is their spacecraft?" Kornilov persisted. "Where is their lunar rover? They couldn't just materialize out of nowhere."
"I share your doubts," said Polovoy. "An absolute impossibility for the Americans to put men and supplies on the moon without our intelligence network monitoring the progress. Our tracking stations would have detected any strange movement entering or coming from space."
"Even stranger yet," said Antonov, "is why the Americans have never announced such a momentous achievement. What do they gain by keeping it a secret?" Kornilov gave a slight nod. "All the more reason to challenge Rykov's report."
"You're all overlooking one important fact," said Yasenin in a level tone. "Selenos 4 went missing immediately after its scanners recorded the figures in the photographs. I say our space probe was damaged by rocket fire, which penetrated the hull, drained away the capsule's pressure, and killed our cosmonauts."
Polovoy looked at him, startled.
"What cosmonauts?"
Yasenin and Kornilov exchanged bemused looks.
"There are some things even the KGB doesn't know," said the general.
Polovoy looked squarely at Kornilov.
"Selenos 4 was a manned probe?"
"As were Selenos 5 and 6. Each craft carried 3 men. He turned to Antonov, who was calmly puffing on a Havana cigar.
"You knew about this?"
Antonov nodded.
"Yes, I was briefed. But you must remember, Vladimir, not all matters concerning space fall under state security. None of you wasted any time running to me when your precious moon probe fell and vanished in the West Indies," Polovoy said angrily.
"An unforeseen circumstance," Yasenin patiently explained. "After its return from the moon, control could not be established for Selenos 4's Earth re-entry. The engineers at our space command wrote it off as a dead lunar probe. After orbiting for nearly a year and a half, another attempt was made to establish command. This time, the guidance systems responded, but the re-entry maneuver was only partially successful. Selenos 4 fell 10,000 miles short of its touchdown area. It was imperative we keep the deaths of our cosmonaut heroes secret. Naturally, the services of the KGB were required."
"How many lost cosmonauts does that make?" asked Polovoy.
"Sacrifices must be made to ensure Soviet destiny," Antonov murmured philosophically.
"And to cover up blunders in our space program," Polovoy said bitterly.
"Let's not argue," cautioned Antonov. "Selenos 4 made a great contribution before it impacted in the Caribbean Sea."
"Where it has yet to be found," Polovoy added.
"True," said Yasenin, "but we retrieved the lunar surface data. That was the main purpose of the mission."
"Don't you think American space surveillance systems tracked its descent and pinpointed the landing position?" If they had set their minds on salvaging Selenos IV, they'd already have it sitting hidden away inside a secure facility.
Of course they tracked the descent trajectory, said Yasenin. But their intelligence analysts had no reason to believe Selenos IV was anything but a scientific deep space probe that was programmed to land in Cuban waters.
There is a crack in your carefully laid plot, Polevoy argued. The United States rescue forces made an exhaustive air and sea search for the missing capitalist Raymond LeBaron in the same general area only a few days after Selenos IV dropped from orbit. I have strong suspicions their search was a decoy to find and retrieve our spacecraft.
I read your report and analysis of the LeBaron disappearance, said Kornilov. I disagree with your conclusion. Nowhere did I see that they conducted an underwater search. The rescue mission was soon called off. LeBaron and his crew are still listed as missing in the American press and presumed dead. That event was merely a coincidence, nothing more.
Then we all agree that Selenos IV and her cosmonauts lie somewhere on the bottom of the sea.
Antonov paused to blow a smoke ring.
The questions we still face are, do we concede the probability the Americans may have a base on the moon? And if so, what do we do about it?
I believe it exists, Yasenin said with conviction. We cannot ignore the possibility, Polevoy granted.
Antonov stared narrowly at Kornilov.
And you, Sergei?
Selenos 8, our first manned lunar landing mission, is scheduled for launch in 7 days, he answered slowly. We cannot scrap the mission as we did when the Americans upstaged us with their Apollo program. Because our leaders saw no glory in being the second nation to set men on the moon, we tucked our tail between our legs and quit. It was a great mistake to place political ideology above scientific achievement. Now we have a proven heavy-lift launch vehicle capable of placing an entire space station with a crew of 8 men on lunar soil. The benefits in terms of propaganda and military rewards are immeasurable. If our ultimate goal is to obtain permanent preeminence in space and beat the Americans to Mars, we must follow through. I vote we program the guidance systems of Selenos 8 to land the crew within walking distance of where the astronauts stood in the crater and eliminate them.
I am in complete agreement with Kornilov, said Yasenin. The facts speak for themselves. The Americans are actively engaged in imperialistic aggression in space. The photographs we've studied prove they've already destroyed one of our spacecraft and murdered the crew. And I believe the cosmonauts in Selenos 5 and 6 met the same fate. They have taken their colonialistic designs to the moon and claimed it for their own. The evidence is unequivocal. Our cosmonauts will be attacked and murdered when they attempt to plant the Red Star on lunar soil.
There was a prolonged hush. No one spoke his thoughts.
Polevoy was the first to break the pensive silence.
So you and Kornilov propose we attack them first?
Yes, said Yasenin, warming to the subject. Think of the windfall. By capturing the American moon base and its scientific technology intact, we'd be advancing our own space program by 10 years. The White House would surely mount a propaganda campaign and condemn us before the world, as they did with the KAL Flight 007 incident, protested Polevoy.
They will remain quiet, Yasenin assured him. How can they announce the seizure of something that isn't known to exist?
The general has a point, said Antonov. Do you realize we could be guilty of launching a war in space, cautioned Polevoy.
The United States struck first. It is our sacred duty to retaliate.
Yasenin turned to Antonov.
The decision must be yours.
The President of the Soviet Union again turned his gaze to the fire. Then he laid the Havana in an ashtray and looked down in wonder at his trembling hands. His face, ordinarily ruddy, was gray. The omen was plain. The demons outnumbered the forces of good. Once the course was set in motion, it would hurtle forward outside his control. Yet he could not allow the country to be slapped in the face by the imperialists. At last, he turned back to the other man in the room and wearily nodded.
For Mother Russia and the party, he said solemnly, arm the cosmonauts and order them to strike the Americans.